Hey, how y'all doing tonight? I'm Seth. I'm an alcoholic. I'm gonna start out with a reading out of the big book here that really kind of hit home for me when I was first coming in. It's page 62 in the big book. So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not give up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness by much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was a keystone of the new and triumphant arch which we would pass to freedom. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed. If we kept close to him and performed his work well, established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. Like I said, I'm Seth. I'm an alcoholic. I was born and raised here in Marietta, Georgia. My sobriety date is November 6th of 2015. So it's just been a year, but it's been an amazing year in this program. I was born and raised in Marietta, Georgia. Went to Bells Ferry Elementary, J.J. Daniel Middle School, and Sprayberry High School, and kind of followed the same steps that my mom did. She was also born and raised here. I grew up in a pretty decent household. My mom worked for the county, and my dad was a teacher also, and real involved in church and whatnot. He was a Sunday school director there for a little while, and it was a great Baptist church where nobody drank, nobody danced, nobody cussed or talked about each other, you know, the good old Baptist way. Up until really, I guess, elementary school, I had never heard of or seen drugs or alcohol. My dad had quit drinking years prior. But what really kind of put it in my head, I think that I was born an addict and alcoholic, personally, because the first thing I heard of was Red Ribbon Week in school, and it piqued my interest. I was like, wait a minute, there's stuff out there that you can do to not be you anymore, to kind of explore the expanded dimension, whatever. And then it was just searching for that first opportunity. And for me, it was 12 years old. I was in middle school. And me and my buddy were riding through the woods on a trail that led from my neighborhood up to top of Shiloh Hills, the power lines up there. And we found about three quarters left in the bottle of tequila. We lived over by Musk Ministries, so there's no telling whose lips were on it before ours was. But I can tell you who finished that bottle. And we went out to dinner with my parents later, man, and they looked at us like we had three heads. They had no clue what we were doing, what we were thinking. But from then on, it was on any opportunity I got. He had a sister that was a little bit older than us, so we get it from her a lot, and it started with blackouts right about that age. There was there's a few times that I started, you know, drinking that it wasn't close to blackout or blacking out. And it was always just more and more. I didn't think of this whole social drinking thing. I didn't understand it, didn't want to. You know, I drank to get completely obliterated. You know, going forward into high school, you know, everything just became much easier to get. You know, we started finding stores that would sell it to us, liquor stores and gas stations and whatnot, and you know, just kept on going. And I thought that was pretty normal. I didn't see anything wrong with it. The whole just coming of age. You know, there's nothing wrong with getting messed up. And you know, I always sought it out. My weekend started on Monday, asking, you know, where's the party at this weekend? It's like, dude, it's Monday. Who cares where the party's at this weekend? We got class and whatnot. It's like, yeah. But where's the party at come Friday night, you know? And, you know, up through, I guess, really, once I started driving, you know, there was no stopping at that point, because I could drive myself to those same stores and get it myself. And, you know, I'd start coming drunk to school and hanging out with some alcoholist friends at school. And, you know, up through graduation, that's really just kind of how it went. It was every weekend, a few times during the week. You know, I got sent home one time for being drunk in school. And it really continued up through graduation. And I remember it was something a little over $1,000 for graduation. You know, just family all over the place sent it in, and they were like, yeah, you know, just save this for your books and going to college and all that. And it was gone in about 2 weeks between alcohol and just partying in general. And I had no idea where I was going to go after I graduated high school until about 2 days before graduation. I got into KSU, and that was a huge surprise to me. But I ended up getting in and failed out of my first semester because I couldn't quit coming drunk or high to class. Didn't pay attention, didn't really want to. I started working at a sawmill right up off 92. And at 18 years old, getting paid $400, $450 a week, you know, cash, that was good money to party with. And we did. And by the end of that, I ended up losing that job as well because couldn't quit coming in, messed up. Shortly after that, I ended up dropping college, you know, because they had me on academic probation. And I moved down to Florida to go to trade school. And I got a job at a restaurant. It was a little burrito factory down there. And they taught me how to work drunk. You know, we would get in, and originally when I first started there, we get out, we closed at 10, we get out about 11:45, close to midnight, and, you know, we got pretty good with the manager and all that, and he was like, look, man, you know, unless we're really busy, you know, y'all can have a couple beers here and there, you know, through the night starting about 8, and that's no problem. And you know, just the minute you get drunk and unproductive, though, we're sending you home for a week. You're not working. I was like, fine by me, you know. And so we started getting out of there at about 10:15 or so after that, because we did not want to lose that privilege. That was gold to us. And then he started asking me, you know, hey, you know, we need to deck scrub the floor out here in the dining room. But here's the catch. You can't be on the clock because our labor's too high, but they don't really care about our beer cost. So if you want to drink the whole time, you know, we'll knock this thing out, and we'd knock it out by, I don't know, about 12 o'clock. We wouldn't leave there till about 3. And I had a few run-ins with the law when I was down there, but I got really lucky because we were outside his apartment, and it was just like, look, man, we're going right here, you know, small town and all that. And we always hooked them up when they came in to to Tijuana Flats, so they'd usually cut us a little break. And so I got real lucky down there. Before I left Florida, drugs are a huge part of my story. I'm going to keep it mainly to alcohol because I do respect singleness of purpose, but there are a few instances that I will bring up because I think they are important. Right before I left Florida, I almost got one of my best friends killed over a deal that I was partying with this girl, and I thought that she was 18. She told me she was 18, everything else. She was actually right around 16, and I went to her house or something because she said she wanted to see me, and her dad pulled out, and he about beat the hell out of both of us. We ended up getting out of there pretty good, and we left the next day and came home. But, you know, that was kind of the start of it, was really that moment where the problems started coming into play here and there. And it didn't really get any better from that point. I came home, I was, you know, 20 years old, brand new, 20 years old, and started working on boats. Because went through a program down in Florida MMI to work on boats. So I came home, started working at Marine Max up in Cumming, Georgia. And, you know, that is one of the jobs you can have besides a restaurant, I think. If you want to keep up with that party lifestyle, because that is just that. It is a party lifestyle. You know, it was nothing for us to go down on the docks on the weekends, and if we were working, and yeah, you know, if they offer you a beer or something, you know, fraternize with them a little bit, you know, get to know your customers and whatnot. And there's quite a few Saturdays where I go down about lunchtime to work on their generator and do some diagnostic work. I wouldn't come back up to the shop till they were long gone, you know, to get my stuff and go back home. And, you know, then I turned 21, working there. And once I was able to buy it for myself in any store I wanted and stop anytime I wanted, it immediately had a turn of events. You know, from there, it went from, you know, I was drinking all the time, but I was, you know, I guess I'd limit myself through the week, because I didn't want to run out until the next time I'd see somebody that they could get it for me or get down somewhere that I knew would sell it to me. So I'd kind of limit myself. But once I could buy it for myself, it was all day, every day. You know, I was 21 years old and starting to wake up during the middle of the night because of how much I was drinking throughout the day and couldn't go back to sleep. And I'd take a few shots or drink a couple beers and go back to sleep, and it would knock it out there for a minute. I get to work, you know, at least 30 to 45 minutes early to take a six-pack with me, and I'd tie it on to a string, and I'd pick a different dock every day so it wasn't suspicious. But I'd take it down to the end and sink it on down. That way, throughout the day, if I started, you know, trembling a little bit, or if I just got pissed off, or if I just wanted a damn beer, I go down there and pull it up, drink a beer, sink the can, sink the rest down, and they'd wait for later. You know, so it went pretty quick. You know, just kind of that, I don't know how to say it, the progression, you know. And the crazy part is I didn't think that was so crazy. You know, other people, they think you're nuts, but I really didn't think it was that crazy. But again, it goes back to that obsession, you know, just to keep it going. You know, and that and the bars, man. Me and my buddies, we go to the bars, and we had one right up here in Marietta that we go to all the time. And we'd go in, you know, just to have a couple beers. That was it. And we'd get there at 7, get a burger, you know, some mini corn dogs or something, a couple pitchers of beer. And the next thing we know, you know, they're calling last call, and somebody was giving me some this like little trail mix from behind the bar to, you know, you need to eat this before you leave here. And, you know, it went from that to there's a couple times one of the bartenders took me home a few times. And I lived back up in Canton. And, you know, I didn't mind driving to Canton. That was the messed up part. You know, I'm down here in Marietta just chilling and partying and, you know, blacked out drunk. And I'm just like, okay, y'all, I'll see y'all next time. And leaving and going back up to Canton, you know, and walking out the next morning, looking around my car, like, did I hit anything? You know, did somebody hit me? Lost a mirror for some odd reason. I have no clue where that went. But it was gone, you know, and my fiance at the time, she came out and was like, what happened to your mirror? I was like, you know, these kids that came out, you know, I saw them beating the hell out of all these cars, and it was not good. But you know, it wasn't too long where my fiance, she had enough of it, because I was coming home every night and either getting blacked out drunk, passing out on the couch, or coming home on the weekends at all hours of the night. And sometimes not even coming home and passing out. There's many nights where I got home and just kept it going until I passed out, you know, and she'd wake me up and there was just a trail because I lost it somewhere in my sleep of just blackness going on the carpet to the bedroom and me passed out on the bed in the morning. And I was like, who the hell did that? Was that the dog? You know, did she eat something? No, that was you. But, she moved back down to Kennesaw because it was easier for her schooling and whatnot, and she really didn't want me around because of where my drinking and use had taken me. And so I moved out to Gainesville with one of the guys I worked with. And, you know, for me, that was very hard because we have a six-year-old right now, but, you know, back then she was two. Yeah, I think two and or three. She was going on three. And moving to Gainesville from living with him for the last, you know, 3 years, it killed me every night. You know, that's all I could think about every night was, damn, I should be next to them, you know. And so it made it even worse. You know, I'd go to the gas station and just get more and drink myself out. And my roommate would be looking at us like, dude, it's 9 o'clock. You know, what are you doing? I was like, man, you know, I'm just having a few beers, you know, no problem. He's like, well, you know, you might want to start looking at that. And Christmas of that year, of that same year, is 2012. We had a Christmas party at work, and I figured that it was at some like steakhouse up and coming, and I figured out that there was no way I could afford to really get drunk there. So I went to the liquor store prior and got a bottle, filled up a couple flasks, and took them with me. And I ordered a couple beers here and there, but the whole time I'm drinking the Cokes down until there's enough room to fill it back up with some whiskey. And I kept drinking those and until I was good and sloshed. And by the end of it, you know, everybody's looking at me like, man, what? You lightweight, dude. You've only had, you know, three or four beers. And you ate this huge, huge meal that the company bought. It's like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm good. I'm tired, you know. And needless to say, they didn't understand really why I was that messed up. But, I was a good drunk and asked everybody if they had a ride home. Did they need a ride home? You know, because I was fine to drive and you were on my way, so I'll take you home. You know, no problem. That night I was on the way home from coming out of Gainesville, and I stopped a couple times to let some off, and I got on to my road, or about a mile from my road. I was talking to my fiance, and the last thing I said to her was, you know, there's something about triple digits to turn me on. And next thing I knew, I called her about 30 minutes later, and I was going, I had blacked out, and when I came to, I was going 110 down a really curvy road up there that I lived on, and went straight through an electric fence, split two oak trees, and knocked off both my side view mirrors again, and down a 50-foot ravine. A fence post had come through my, came through my windshield and stuck into the headrest in the passenger seat. You know, so anybody that I would have had with me, you know, to either crash the house or take home, you know, they'd be, I would not be up here telling the story tonight, you know. But I walked out of that unhurt, unscratched, you know. I got climbed out of the ditch and got up to the top, and neighbor came out. You all right? Yeah. Anybody hurt? No. Anybody with you? No. All right, well, I ain't going to call the law. You need to get it out of there, though. And so I had AAA and called AAA to come get it out. And right away, he saw this was not just a slip-up. This was an accident, and I was drunk. And, you know, he wanted to call the law. And I ended up paying him off not to call anybody. And that was December. About 4 months later, in March, I had left work and met up with a buddy at Rooster's and come and just have a couple beers and some dinner, because I had just started a new job. And we were going back and forth, you know, and finished our dinner, and it was about 9 o'clock, and I'm telling my fiance, because it was on a Friday, and it was supposed to be coming back down here to see her, and I kept telling her, yeah, traffic's terrible. There's trucks stuck on the side of the road on Buford Dam. And, you know, I don't know when they're going to get it out. They called somebody, though. And we ended up closing down Rooster's out there. And again, he was offering me to take him to his house. You know, he had a ride and all that. I was like, no. you know, I got to get back down to Kennesaw to see my family and whatnot. Meanwhile, I'd called my dealer up in Cartersville to meet him for some stuff, and I drove from Cumming to Cartersville kind of in and out, and met up with him at Walmart, and, you know, did some, and I wasn't drunk anymore, but I got started going down the wrong way on Highway 41, and I did not know that on Highway 41 and Cartersville, there's Xena Drive right there, which is where Bartow County Sheriff's Department is, and they found me fishtailing right there at the light to turn around to get back to 75, and I got arrested for DUI, and then they had, you know, probable cause to search my car, and I ended up with 3 felonies and 6 misdemeanors, because I had just about anything you could think of with me. And, you know, I sat in jail for about 3 days. You know, I didn't even call my parents, because my whole life they told me, you know, you better not call me if you get in trouble. You know, don't waste your phone call and call me. So I called my fiance at the time. She made some calls, and I walk out to my surprise. My mom's standing there with her, and my mom's mortified because she grew up, you know, her parents didn't do anything. She never saw her dad swear, you know, and so she was mortified coming into the jail, and it wasn't for like a tour or something, or to see somebody she went to church with. And you know, it was I got out and I was like, well, at least it's not dad, you know, because my dad would have kicked my ass. And little did I know, my dad was on the way up there with a trailer saying, we're getting you from Gainesville, bringing you back down here so we can watch you a little better and make sure you're not messing up. I was like, oh, shit. You know, it's not what I want to do right now. And the thing is, we weren't really on talking terms, because they had just got a divorce, and it was a messy situation. But, you know, that was the first time we had talked in probably 7 or 8 months, was me getting out of jail. But I moved down here, you know, and I kind of realized that I had had a problem by that point. And, you know, I decided to walk into the rooms. And I walked in at Kennesaw Cornerstone, which is still my home group. And I went 74 days of good, solid, you know, AA, you know, and I went, that Wednesday was my first meeting. I went back there that Friday and found a sponsor, and he was like, perfect, man, you know, the group conscious is next week on Wednesday. You know, I want you to come with me so you can kind of see what AA is all about. And I went with them, you know, and they're start going around the finances and all that. And we're like, well, we need a chairman for next month. I said, I'll be your chairman. I'll put out every chair you got. No problem. And, you know, my sponsor just kind of looked at me and was like, just go sit down. You're fine with coffee. You know, and so, like I said, it was about 74 days, and then I got back around it, and it was off to the races again, you know. And it was like that for the next 2 years, really, just going back and forth. And I'd get 10 days here, you know, 30 days here, but it always led straight back to it. And, you know, they talk about it being a progressive illness in the big book, and I can honestly say that is completely true. Every time it got worse and worse and worse. And my use went up. My drinking never stopped. And it continued like that. And in June of 2015, I got into a accident coming from my favorite bar there on Canton Road. It was somebody's birthday and all that, and we got pretty trashed. And I was going from there to the Waffle House on the Canton Road connector. And it's not that far, you know. And I blacked out somewhere around racetrack, and my foot went straight to the floor. I don't know what it is about me and blacking out behind the wheel and that foot going straight to the floor, but it did, you know. And I remember looking down. And I was glued to the speedometer, you know, because I wanted it to hit that 100 mark just to see if it would start skipping, you know, if it was going to hit the rev limiter or if it would kind of keep going. And I looked up and there was a turn and I missed it and went straight across the median and hit somebody else. And, you know, I almost killed my best friend, and he was with me, and I hurt them pretty bad. They went straight to the hospital, and you know, I'm about to go through a lawsuit for that, you know. And but really, it's because of this program that, you know, for me, it is what it is. You know, I did that. I'll do whatever I got to do to you know, make that right, you know, because I don't know if some of the injuries are permanent or not, you know. I mean, I was just told to kind of stay away. And let it be what it is until things start coming to a head. But you know, so it was back to jail for me, and went to college this time, and that time I wasn't in too long. I called some different people, and they got me out pretty quick. But you know, then ended up losing the job that I had in out in Buford. And I broke up with my ex a few months, well, she broke up with me a few months before that in April, and, you know, because of how bad everything had gotten. And so I came out of jail with really nothing. You know, I called work, told them about it, and told them I was going to go to rehab, and they're like, okay, well, you know, we'll stick with you through rehab and all that, you know, just figure it out. And I couldn't find a rehab. Wasn't really looking for a rehab. You know, I was still just going. And, you know, I tried going back to work about 4 weeks later. And I had my mom take me up there on a Sunday, or yeah, Sunday night. I was up all night from one of Alcohol's many friends, and I surprised my boss the next morning because I broke into the building and was sleeping inside the showroom in one of the boats. And, you know, I surprised him, just like, hey, you know, I'm here to work. And he was like, what the fuck are you doing, man? And I had a tent and a bike, and I set up camp right down the road at one of the boat ramps and was biking up there every day trying to get my job back. And, you know, the HR lady was like, where are you living? And I'm like, with a friend, you know. I befriended a squirrel in the woods, and, you know, it ended up not working out. So the next week, my dad came and picked me up, brought me back home, and it was really the charges I got in Bartow County. I hadn't been to court for any of that yet, so I was really kind of in limbo, you know, because it took almost 2 years to get an arraignment hearing for those charges. And so I came back in limbo, and I had nothing. You know, my friends, by that point, they were there when, you know, they wanted to see how I was doing, but that was about it because they knew where I was at. And I ended up, you know, didn't really want to be at home anymore because I didn't want to, you know, just have that shit in my mom's house. And, you know, so I moved in with my dealer most of the time and was living there with, you know, that was it. That was my life, you know, until I went to jail. And then eventually I did go to jail, did 30 on 60. And, you know, that was the first time since that 74 days that I was forced to be sober. You know, you didn't have a choice. You were miserable and doing whatever. And I got, by the end of it, that last week, I was so scared to get out because I was finally, you know, kind of somewhat sober. You know, it was in jail, but it was 30 days nonetheless, you know, and I was terrified to get out. And I got out, and we threw a big party, and I, you know, got drunk, and just I was the last one up, as usual, you know, and pissed off because we ran out of beer, couldn't find anything else, and you know, I did that twice, and I ended up looking at myself and just being like, look, man, you know, it came to that breaking point where they talk about in the big book where, you know, you can't vision life with alcohol or without it. You know, I was drinking because I didn't want to. Yeah, you know, I didn't want to drink anymore, but I felt like I needed it, you know, I mean, my hands weren't shaking anymore because I had that you know, little bit of time without it to kind of get that part over with. But, you know, I felt like I needed it. I felt like that was the only way I could be normal. And I started realizing, you know, you're either going to be dead before you're 30 or you're going to be in prison. And I walked back into AA and or I called my old sponsor, and he was like, hey, you know, how's everything going? I was like, it's perfect. It is exactly how I want it, you know. And he was like, well, you want to go to a meeting? And said, yeah, you know. And we met and went to a meeting. And that night getting out, he was like, look, man, you know, if you want to give this thing a shot again, you know, you're going to have to show me that you're not full of shit. Because right now I think you're completely full of shit. You know, you've been coming in and out. You know, you haven't done many of the suggestions that I've suggested to you in the past. You know, so you're going to have to prove yourself here. He said, do 90 and 90. And I was not perfect in 90 and 90. I know a lot of people that were. I was not. I hit 78 out of 90. But it planted that seed. You know, it made it, started making it a part of my life. And then really sitting down and starting going through the steps, you know, that they say that first step is the one that you have to do perfect. For me, I had to prove that to myself because I thought that I had, you know, the first time when I came in that I knew I was powerless over alcohol you know, my life was obviously unmanageable, but that powerless thing, just, I didn't believe it. You know, I thought it was true, but I didn't believe it. And I proved that to myself, you know, through everything that had gone on and happened. And after that, you know, it started getting a little easier. You know, for me, it took roughly about 6 months before, you know, that obsession started kind of subside and go away, you know. But it was through this program and through working these steps that made that possible. You know, and it was right around that, you know, fourth and fifth step, where I just really, it made me realize that you're carrying around so much shit you don't need to carry around. You know, why is that your problem? Why are these things your problem? You know, why are you making it your problem? And, you know, to let go of a lot of that stuff, man, it was very freeing, because I had a lot of resentments. You know, I've heard of some people say, you know, their sponsor told them to take it back and work on it some more. My sponsor was like, you brought me a book, you know, and we went through it, and I had never really felt better before. And then continuing on, you know, starting to make those lists and make the amends. You know, I talked to people that I hadn't talked to in years. And was freaked out, you know, because I didn't know if they were going to have me arrested or if they were just going to be like, well, thanks, you know, F off, whatever. But, you know, it's about cleaning up your side of the street. You know, what they do with it, that's on them at that point. And for me, it worked out pretty well. You know, I've gotten in touch with some old friends. They were genuinely good friends that had nothing to do with drinking or using for me, you know, that I had chased off because of my drinking and using. And then continuing on, you know, the I have no sponsees yet. You know, the first real 12-step work that I got was telling my story on Wednesday night and then telling it tonight, you know. But on Wednesday night, somebody came up and said, you know, just started here a couple weeks ago, and you know, that really kind of resonated with me. And you know, that's all I can do. You know, that just, I know this program works. You know, I know it's kept me sober, and you know, the changes for me, other people saw way before I started noticing them. You know, and my mom told me that all the time. And she was like, you know, I don't know what it is. You know, I don't know what it is. But, you know, I can see it working. I was like, I hope so, you know, because I still feel like shit. You know, I don't feel any better, but I'm glad you see it. And, but, you know, today, though, you know, I can tell you how, I mean, it's amazing how much better it is. You know, I don't want to go back to the way I was living for anything. You know, and I know staying in this program, you know, and staying active, doing the service work, you know, doing it, anything that's asked of me or suggested to me through this program, it's going to keep me sober, you know. I got some hard stuff coming up here. My daughter's moving out to California here in the middle of this month. And, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. But, you know, that was the first time in a long time where that drink ever crossed my mind. And the first thing I did was start signing up for more service commitments, you know, to keep myself grounded in this program. Because I know it's got me this far, and it'll keep me going further as long as I just keep it in today and keep it, you know, in this program. But that's all I got, guys. Thanks.